Welcome once again to our program, our 29th session on the universal call to holiness, our wholeness, our wholesomeness, our another word is really happiness, reasonable happiness in this life, and eternal happiness, seeing God face to face in the next. My guest again is Ron Eldred, professor of religion and world history at John Paul II Catholic High on the campus of St. Patrick Parish. I'm your host, Monsignor Larry Moran, pastor emeritus at St. Patrick at 19th and Poplar, where the Shamrock intersects the two streets. Welcome once again, Ron. And we've been talking about prayer as being one of the means to holiness. And then we got into how to resist the world, the flesh, and the devil, the three sources of temptation. And I just heard such a good story. I want to relate it about holiness. The Holy Father, Pope John Paul II, late at night was writing at his desk, and the sister who takes care of him came in and said, "Oh, Holy Father, you're up so late. I'm worried about your holiness." And he turned and said, "Oh, I too am worried about my holiness." So we all, in a sense, need to be concerned about our holiness and wholeness. Well, Ron, let's go on. When and how does the worldly spirit, not just the world, but the worldly spirit, become a stumbling block or an obstacle to our sanctification and holiness and salvation?
Well, let me preface my answer with some of the concluding remarks we made in our last session, where we were making the point, or trying to make the point, that the world is good. God created it good, but there are stumbling blocks in it. And so this is what we're trying now to warn people about, and what some of the great spiritual theologians and directors have told us. The things of this world become an enemy to our spiritual lives only when we become excessively attached to them, as St. Teresa of Avila had warned us not to be, and when we live only for the pleasures and satisfactions that we get out of created things. According to Father Jordan Allman, who we quoted many times, one of the world's great spiritual directors, the worldly spirit is manifested in four ways. So we're going to discuss these four ways here now. The first one he gives us is the worldly spirit stresses the importance of pleasure, comfort, riches, fame, violence, and power. It advises us followers to enjoy life while they can, to make the most of what the world has to offer, to find security and the maximum bodily comfort. And so what he's really doing is warning us against those kinds of things here, that is one of the things where the world can be an enemy to our spiritual life.
I think one of the classic quotations from ancient Rome was, "Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die," as if there's nothing after life that we need to prepare for.
Another thing he warns us about, the worldly spirit is found in the ridicule and persecution of those who strive to live honestly and decently. People who live by their senses claim that they are free of all moral restrictions and live as they please, and they make a mockery of any authority or law that would guide people along the path of self-control and obedience. Not wanting to observe the law themselves, they, Father tells us, that they cultivate a special disdain for those who honestly strive to lead good lives.
So he's right on target with two of his suggestions, how the worldly spirit is manifested. What are the other two?
The worldly spirit is found in the pleasures and diversions of those who observe no control in regard to their appetites, their lower appetites. For example, excesses in sex and in the uses of drugs, alcohol, and food are accepted as being in good taste socially, in lots of circles. He tells us that the theater and magazines and other media of entertainment know no restrictions except the strong arm of the law or the startled indignation of the public. According to Father Allman, the abnormal becomes normal in the lives of many of these persons.
Okay, the worldly spirit is sort of like quicksand. It slowly draws us more deeply into itself.
Well, you can see this with talking about moral matters. things that 25, 30 years ago, and I could name a dozen of them, I'm sure you could name that many, if not more, that were considered sinful, that they were considered antisocial, and all kinds of things of that sort, today are normal.
Abortion, same-sex marriage.
Yes.
Pornography.
Yes. And finally, the worldly spirit is found in the scandal, bad example that confront the earnest Christian at every turn. He tells us it's not a question merely of all persons who give scandal by their evil eyes, but what is even worse, scandal is sometimes given by those who, because of their Christian belief or state in life, should be examples of virtue. With good reason, he tells us, St. John complains, quote, "The whole world is under the evil one." He's quoting John, 1 John 5:19 here. Again, this is overall from Jordan Allman's book, Spiritual Theology.
Okay, so the four things that he suggests is that we can get too attracted to comfort and pleasure and power, that the worldly spirit ridicules those who are trying to be follow the teachings of God.
And of course, people don't like to be ridiculed, so a lot of times they'll compromise, you know.
I heard a woman say recently, she had five children, and she was walking through the grocery store, the mart, and a woman came up to her and said, "Don't you know what causes children?" You know, a real put down about, "Don't you know how to stop that?" So that's a real blow to somebody who's trying to be generous in the bringing of new life into the world. And I think people in our society, anybody who has more children maybe than two or three, they start being getting some flack from people about snide remarks and put downs. And
I think another that the Father is emphasizing here is that how the sensual kinds of things tends to subdue people and attract people. The evil's glamorous, and people are very attracted to it. And then finally, the bad example that people set. There's so many people in Hollywood, or people in sports, or unfortunately people even in the religious life who are scandalous, their behavior. They're not really leading good, holy lives and setting a good example for the rest of us.
And I think one of the normalities that is really abnormal is you can't go through a checkout line in hardly any store without seeing who's divorcing whom and who's going with who else's wife or husband, or who's having a baby by somebody else than the person they're married to. It's right there. You just have to stand there and look at all those magazines that are in almost every store. So it's kind of become a normal. Remember when I visited Ireland, which was, I had such high respects of the land of St. Patrick, the land of saints and scholars. Even in the little stores, they had those magazines about who was divorcing whom and who was carrying who else's baby and the like. So it's an atmosphere that we breathe, and it's a worldly atmosphere that I think we at least have to be aware of. Okay, what about that old saying, be not of the world, in the world, but not of it?
Father Allman says that the most effective remedy against the influence of the world and worldly persons is to flee it. However, since the majority of Christians must live in the world and still pursue Christian perfection, it's necessary that they strive to acquire the mind and spirit of Christ, who also lived in the world, but was opposed to its spirit. His advice to live in the world and not to let it overwhelm us is here, so we'll share those with our listeners. One is to avoid the occasions of sin. That's probably the most important one of all. In this regard, Father Allman says that, quote, "He who loves danger will perish in it. Whether it be a question of worldly possessions, mundane pleasures, or creature attachments, Christians must keep themselves from temptation. The occasions that are sinful for one may not be so for another. And for that reason, it is difficult to make any universal laws in this matter. The father goes on to say that the best rule in this matter is to ask ourselves, what would Jesus do in this particular situation? Also to remember St. Paul's admonition that not all things that are lawful are prudent. And I might add to that, moral either. Not all things that are lawful are moral.
Well, that's a good point. I would think, as you indicated, Ron, avoiding the occasions of sin whenever we can, because we can't always avoid the occasions of sin.
Sometimes they call it the proximate occasion.
Proximate occasion of sin. You know, the old act of contrition used to say, I will do penance, amend my life, and avoid all occasions of sin. The Archbishop of Denver, before he got a job in the Vatican, told a story at the youth conference out there, must have been 15 years or so ago when the Pope came to Denver. But he said there was a guy walking down the street, and he was admiring all the wonderful things in the shops, and suddenly he fell into an open manhole. And, he climbed out, and he was bruised and blackened and dirty and full of sludge, and so he climbed out, went home, got cleaned up. So the next day, he was walking down the street, and he said, I'm going to be careful about that manhole that's open. And he got talking to somebody up above, and my golly, he fell into the manhole again, and he climbed out again, bruised, beaten, black, and full of smudges and dirt. So he went home, he got cleaned up. And the third day, he was coming down that street, and he said, I'm not going to go down this street. I'm going to go a different way. Well, and that's basically what we got to avoid the open manholes. And the best way, because it's easy to fall into them even when we don't want to.
Well, that's like I tell my kids, because you need to get pretty specific, of course, you know, when you're talking to kids you're teaching. Stay away from other kids that, they're trouble causers, that are going to, that do things that that are sinful and could not in themselves, and not only that, but get you in trouble as well. And don't read things that are not good to read. Don't watch things that are not good to write. We have to keep some kind of control, you know, over our senses. In other words, what we mean by that is don't place yourself in that circumstance and think that God is always going to just lift you out of it.
Sure.
If you put yourself in that situation because of our fallen human nature. Some people think, well, if I associate with these people, I can change them. But that rarely ever happens. Usually it's the other way around. They end up changing you. I've seen good kids, lots of good kids over the years, kids that I've known that I've taught before, would go on into another atmosphere, into another school, and I would hear very disappointing things. Well, that's some of them. Most of them not. Mm-hmm. But with a few, I would hear some very saddening or very disappointing things, that I heard that they were, you know, running around with the wrong crowd, or that they were starting to drink. They were starting to maybe take drugs in some cases, or they were getting involved in promiscuous sex and things of that sort. And you can't place yourself in those kind of environments and expect to remain free of that kind of behavior.
I think one of the good things that really good parents are concerned about, who are your friends at high school? Of course, when they get away in college, there's not much control about that. But I have to agree 100% as a parish priest for 54 years that it's really true. Tell me with whom you go, and I'll tell you what you are. Birds of a feather flock together. And that too often a good person is pulled down into the quicksand of alcohol or experimenting with drugs or promiscuous sex. And they're just quicksands in our society, but especially the people that we go with.
Some more advice that Father gives us here, how to deal with the world, is to enliven one's faith. He says that, quote, faith is an intellectual assent to certain dogmas and mysteries. When it is perfected, it gives us an attitude of mind or a way of judging things in a divine manner. It enables us to see things through the eyes of God, so to speak. A strong faith will enable the Christian to see God in all things and to walk through great dangers unharmed, because he is able to rise above those things that are temptations for others. He goes on to say here, a strong faith will enable the Christian to withstand the taunts and ridicule of worldly persons, end of quote. This quote comes from his book, Spiritual Theology.
I think that's a powerful statement, to withstand the taunts and ridicule of worldly, or this world only focused people, because it's a powerful influence to do evil, to commit sin, even though I may not agree with it. I'm going to go along with the crowd. And that's a powerful encouragement, I think, by Father, to strengthen our faith in any way we can, as well as avoid the occasions of sin.
Another thing, advice he gives us, is to meditate on the vanity of the world. Recall, this was the advice that St. Teresa of Avila gave us. Regarding this, Father Ammann states that, quote, "The world passes quickly, and life passes even more quickly. There is nothing stable and permanent in the world's judgment and friendships. There is nothing completely satisfying in its delights. Those who are applauded today are criticized tomorrow. The evil prosper, for they have their reward in this world. But Christians who realize that they have not here a lasting city, but are travelers in the eternal fatherland, know that only God is changeless, and only his justice and truth will remain forever. For this reason, only those who do the will of God abide forever." He is quoting 1 John 2:17 here as he ends this quotation here.
So if we can live in the presence of God, or in the sense that we're travelers, we're only on a journey, as Pope John Paul II, Pope John XXIII said, "I always try to keep my suitcase packed. I want to be ready to go. I know I'm not just here forever." Okay, some other things that Father would...
Well, there's one other piece of advice he gives us here, and this is, I think, very good. And ignore what the world thinks. And in this regard, Father advises us not to, quote, "to be concerned about what they will say, for this is an attitude unworthy of a Christian." Jesus said explicitly that he would deny before his heavenly Father anyone who denies him before men. He's quoting here Matthew 10:33. Is there necessary for the Christian to take a firm stand in this matter and to follow the injunction of Christ to the letter? "He who is not with me is against me." Here he's quoting Matthew 12:30. And St. Paul warns that it is not a disciple of Christ who would be concerned about pleasing men. Here he's quoting St. Paul in his letter to the, or his epistle to the Galatians 1:10.
This reminds me again about the people we associate with. And ordinarily, parents warn their high school students, youth ministers at colleges warn the students to try to get in with a good group, try to stay close to the church, try to work with the Newman Center or something like that. But I would even say it not only applies to the younger, it applies to any of us. I know a woman, her marriage broke up just because she was running with a group of divorced women who would say things like to her, like, "Oh, don't put up with that. You don't have to live with that. My gosh, get a divorce and find somebody else." Well, if I'm in that environment, that's going to affect me very, very negatively, and I'm going to start seeing nothing but faults in my husband and miss some of the really good things that are there. So I think psychologists guesstimate, and that's all it is, that most of us are affected 75% or 80% by the environment and the people that we are constantly with. What would your experience be about that? Is that a good guess, or
yes,
too high? Or
no, I think that's pretty good.
Okay, well, anything else you want to say before we conclude? The worldliness as our enemy.
Just one final word of Father Ammann's here. He warns us that, quote, and he has a really good quote here, and I want to make a comment on after. "One who desires to reach sanctity must be absolutely indifferent to what the world may think or say. One's only concern must be to do the will of God, no matter what the cost. And it is best to make the decision from the very first. so that all may know at the outset where one stands. We have been warned by Christ that the world will hate and persecute us. He's quoting here John 15, 18 through 20. But if the world sees that we stand firm in our decision to follow Christ and his laws, it will ultimately leave us in peace and consider the battle lost. The best way to conquer the world is not to yield a single pace, but take an unswerving stand in renouncing its false maxims and its vanities. I tell my students whenever the world praises us, we had best examine our lives very carefully, because we're probably doing something wrong.
Well, and that's a reminder that we are known by our friends, and we are also known by our enemies. Even Jesus, the perfect person, God made man, had enemies. But they told us more about the enemies than they told us about Jesus.
Kind of reminds me of a story back a number of years ago. Some very holy priest was and scholar, he was a seminary professor, I believe, was asked, what do you think about a certain subject or a certain issue? Something was going on at the time. And his answer was, who's against it and who's for it? And then I'll tell you. That's putting into practice this idea you said that birds of a feather flock together, so that he pretty well, if he knew who was for it and against it, then he knew where he stood.
I have to throw in here, because of a personal experience over the past 3 or 4 years as a pastor, and now I'm pastor emeritus, of course, but I think young women, young girls, often are attracted to really guys who are bums and very unstable emotionally and morally, because they have a motherly instinct to change the person. And I'm sure that I can change the person if only I get a chance. And when my parents say that guy is no good, stay away from him, well, you don't understand. I understand. And he's told me I'm one of the few people that really understand him. Well, that's a fish hook if there ever was one. So we have to really be careful about whom we associate with, and that we have to be, we need support groups. We need support from other people. And that's why being in a youth group or being in a Catholic high, like John Paul II here at St. Patrick's in Otero, can be such an added help both to the student and to the parents. Well, anything else, or shall we go on to the second thing that is a great obstacle to us, the flesh?
Well, that's a subject that's probably going to take us at least a couple of half-hour sessions, because there's so much to look at and how we can control this whole matter.
Okay, so, well,
probably our worst enemy.
Because it's so close to us.
Yes.
I can never get away from myself. And even the great saints, Saint Benedict, Saint Francis, Saint Jerome, they talk about their wrestling with the flesh when they were in their cave at Bethlehem, or Francis throws himself into the thorn bush at Assisi, or Benedict throws himself into a thorn bush trying to overcome the pull, the magnetism that he was getting from his bodily appetites. So it's a powerful, powerful and ever-present temptation for even the great saints, as well as for all of us.
Well, I know it was one of the greatest difficulties that St. Augustine had. He had other problems, of course. It wasn't just matters of the flesh. He also had, he was full of pride and arrogance and all kinds of things as a young man. And, you know, he'd been trained in pagan philosophy, and he was quite a prominent, pagan philosopher before he became, a Catholic after many years. And but yes, that was one of the great struggles that he had, of course, was with the flesh, probably more than anything else. You know, when he died, if I recall right, reading somewhere that the last two or three days of his life, he lay flat on his back, and the whole time he was beating his breast and saying the Jesus prayer. I think I've read something similar to
Augustine
about his life, yes.
Okay.
Which is, Lord Jesus Christ, Son of God, have mercy on me, a sinner. And I suppose maybe he might have been thinking about those youthful indiscretions, of course, when he was a young man.
Up to the time, he was pretty well into a deep, deep worldly spirit, both the world, the flesh, and certainly Satan.
Well, he had a concubine, I believe. I don't think he was ever actually married to this.
And he had a son.
Yes, that's right. He did have a son.
Adiodatus, wasn't it?
Yes.
Which means a gift of God. Okay, well, we're coming to the close, and let's maybe tie up a little bit about what we've been saying, that Cardinal Newman has a great saying, and I've repeated it over and over to myself and to others in confession or in homilies and the like, but he said, as well, you try to harness the power of human passion, human drives, by reason alone, as to quarry granite with a razor blade, or moor, anchor a ship with a thread of silk. And see, I think that's the thing that is so hard for us to be aware of. Most of the time, we're pretty reasonable people, but sometimes, easily, any of us, any place, can turn in to Mr. Hyde from that wonderful, pleasant, loving, considerate Dr. Jekyll, and then something happens to us, and it's almost like another person takes over us. And I think most of us, as we get older, realize, hey, there is a good me and a bad me. There is a, what do they call, a savage wolf that prowls inside of me. And that's why we have to keep up our spiritual life and our spiritual exercises.
Well, we can only go so far in, you know, helping ourselves, using our will and making a decision to do this or not to do this, but in the final analysis, it's God's grace that's going to help us do it.
And I would say, as a little final statement, that one of the things I see happening to myself or to others is, beware when I get too tired, because our defenses, not only physically, but mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, are greatly lowered. Well, I think we've come to the end of our time. So once again, thank you for being with us on the Universal Call to Holiness. And may God bless you always and in all ways.